From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with the latest. It will cost the state of Alaska nearly $500,000 to settle with two doctors Governor Mike Dunleavy fired from the state psychiatric hospital for refusing to take what they deemed a political loyalty pledge. The state has agreed to pay Anthony Blanford $220,000 and John Belleville $275,000 to cover lost wages, other losses, and attorney fees. A federal district court judge ruled in October that Dunleavy and his first chief of staff, Tuckerman Babcock, violated the First Amendment rights of two psychiatrists. The state appealed. The settlement announced Wednesday ends the case with no admission of fault. But the agreement does include a passage that says the defendants agree that the state can't fire employees for their political views unless they are policymakers or in other limited circumstances. Typically, new governors secure the resignations of department heads and other political appointees. Dunleavy went further. He demanded resignation letters from hundreds of state workers. The employees had to express an interest in staying on in order to keep their jobs. Judge John Sedgwick said the Dunleavy administration essentially required a commitment of political support to its agenda in return for continued employment. He also found that Dunleavy and Babcock were personally responsible for violating the psychiatrist's First Amendment rights. The settlement agreement, though, says the state will pay the money subject to the legislature's approval. In a separate case, Sedgwick also ruled last month in favor of former Assistant Attorney General Libby Bacalar, whom Dunleavy fired on his first day in office. Damages in her case have not been decided. Representative Ron Gillum is back in Juneau after he was hospitalized for a heart attack last week. The Soldotna Republican said on Tuesday he was released from Providence, Alaska Medical Center over the weekend and is ready to get back to work. Gillum says he first noticed symptoms last Wednesday after he and his wife got dinner with friends in Juneau. When he got in bed around 10 p.m. Wednesday, he felt a pain in his chest. He first thought it was indigestion, but it continued late into the night, and then he started sweating.
And all of a sudden, it was like somebody dumped a bucket of water on me.
His wife suggested they go to the hospital around 1 a.m., and he checked into the emergency room at Bartlett Regional Hospital. He says a doctor noticed his blood pressure was low and found a vessel was clogged at the bottom of his heart.
They scheduled a medevac to Providence, and due to weather, they couldn't get me out. So I was in the Bartlett ER for about 4 hours.
In the meantime, he was given medication to unclog the vessel. When Gillum finally did get to Anchorage around 7:30 a.m., doctors put a stent into his heart to help keep the vessel open. Gillum says he was released with no restrictions Saturday and flew back to Juneau this week. He says he's grateful for the doctors at Bartlett and Providence for taking good care of him, and he says he's ready to move forward.
I've never taken medication any stronger than an ibuprofen. I just don't like it. But from now on, for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to take a couple of different medications.
He says anyone with a history of heart issues in their family should get checked out by their doctor. In Washington, D.C., every state is represented in Congress and also on the ground with street names and on monuments. And signs of the 49th state in the nation's capital aren't as obvious as, say, Pennsylvania Avenue. But just north of the city in a suburban park stands a Tlingit totem pole. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin introduces us to a man who was determined to find out how it got there.
My guide for this journey is a teacher from Juneau staying with family in the area.
Would you say your name?
Sure, Scott Maxwell.
And you grew up where exactly?
I grew up in Potomac, Maryland, which is basically here.
Maxwell visited Cabin John Park a lot as a boy, especially the children's play area.
But here we are.
The totem pole stands there with no context on a concrete base. It's about 15 feet tall. It has a traditional raven at the top with a classic form line eye and a beaver at the bottom.
I'm surprised it still has so much paint on it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you'll see that some parts of her paint retain the paint just fine. And then you can clearly see some, rot starting to take hold.
The hand-carved pole, with blade marks still visible, made an impression on Maxwell as a kid. He thinks it had something to do with why he eventually moved to Alaska.
It was just sort of always standing sentinel at the entrance to the playground. But it's funny because this pole has survived at least 3 or 4 generations of playground equipment.
The base used to have a plaque. All that's left of it now is some residual glue. Maxwell posted inquiries on Facebook, on local nostalgia groups, but he says people only wanted to reminisce about other park features, like Porky the Litter Eater.
You're going to hear a little motor start up.
It's basically a talking trash can, a cartoonish pig face on the side of a little hut with a vacuum-powered mouth. Porky's history is well documented, but Maxwell couldn't find anyone with information on the totem pole, so he appealed to Alaskans on Twitter.
Alaska Twitter moved very quickly and got me an answer within minutes.
Within minutes.
CJ Yellowhawk is how she's listed on Twitter. She, within, I think, 15 minutes, she had the program from the dedication ceremony in back in the 60s. That was, so hats off to you on that one.
The four-page program revealed the pole was erected in 1966 by the Potomac Area Council of Campfire Girls, as the group was then called. Maxwell had missed a big clue. Carved into the beaver's tail is the campfire logo. The program also revealed the totem pole was carved in Haines. As soon as that information was posted, another Twitter user said she was sitting with one of the carvers, her father-in-law, John Hagen. Hagen didn't want to do a recorded interview, but he says he worked on the campfire pole when he was about 18 with master carver Leo Jacobs. He saw it as a chance to get paid while he learned to carve. And he didn't mind carving non-traditional symbols. Hagen says people commissioned what they wanted. He worked on one that went to a beekeeper in California. Another went to the actor James Earl Jones. The carver's son, also named John Hagen, says he loves knowing his father's work is appreciated thousands of miles away.
For me, it's amazing to see it disseminated widely, but I know there's a lot more cultural baggage to that.
Hagen says commissions like the campfire pole helped keep the carving tradition alive. But he thinks there may have been a time when it was easier to get a totem pole out of Haines than to show it locally. For Scott Maxwell, it was a relief to hear the totem pole he loved as a child was authentic and obtained properly.
It would confirm kind of what I was hoping to hear was that, yes, indeed, it was from Alaska. It was carved by native Tlingit carvers and that it was the real deal.
Another revelation was that the totem pole and Porky the Litter Eater were installed in the same year, just yards from each other. It underscores just how random the placement of a Tlingit totem pole was in this suburban spot. Reporting from Cabin John Park in Maryland, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And Republican State Representative Christopher Kirka announced his running mate for his bid to be Alaska's next governor. Paul Huper of Homer will be on the ticket with Kirka. Back in April, Huper made the news when his house in Homer was raided by the FBI after investigators mistakenly identified his wife as a participant in the Capitol riot. Kirka made the lieutenant governor announcement on Monday in Wasilla. Huper and his wife Marilyn own the Homer Inn and Spa. Huber described himself as a spirit-filled Christian and said he wants to be an immovable rock in his principles. He also said that if oppression from the federal government doesn't change, Alaska will evolve into, quote, the next Cuba.
If we don't wake up, we're going to lose this republic, but more importantly, we're going to lose this country of Alaska. We really are our own country. We have to start thinking in terms of independence from the federal government.
Huber has said he and his wife went to Washington, D.C. for the January 6th protest and went to the Capitol lawn, but did not go inside the building. Huber described the raid on their house and said seven guns were pointed at his head. He also described how the couple have since appeared on national conservative media outlets. Huber criticized Governor Mike Dunleavy for health mandates early in the pandemic, and he said Alaskans are tired of compromise. He spoke in support of the Pebble Mine. And he criticized the current system for selecting judges in the state, particularly the appointees of the Alaska Bar Association, on a commission that nominates judicial candidates for the governor to choose from.
Since when does the fox get to guard the hen house?
Kirka said one of the primary reasons he chose Huper is their shared passion for election integrity.
Because of the incredible role that the lieutenant governor has in overseeing the division of elections, we have to have somebody who is dedicated to cleaning up the disaster that will become our division of elections.
Candidates for governor have until June 1st to choose their running mates. That is the latest from the KTOO newsroom. If you're looking for more local and statewide news, you can visit us at ktoo.org. I'm Rasha McChesney. This is KTOO News.